This is the Financial Sense News Hour with the president of PFS Group, Jim Poplava. Since 1982, PFS Group has offered asset management and educational resources that have helped investors build, maintain, and preserve their wealth. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team, Jim Poplava and John Loeffler.
I guess this is the part where you put in a drum roll, because this Sunday, this weekend, the big Greek elections, my big fat Greek elections, will they exit or stay with the austerity program? Will they exit from the euro? And we don't have enough time to cover all of the possible permutations of this, all the possible outcomes. And it's also a moving target, because as things change at each stage, then the whole scenario changes. So you can speculate on certain things, but it'll be different a week from now or something like that. But at least we should look at the fundamentals of this, because this will affect monetary policy worldwide.
Yeah, the problem with Europe, John, is it's really doesn't center on Greece as the media is playing it. How the euro turns out, whether it holds together or collapses, it's really going to play out with Spain. And if we look at the euro right now, it is a currency without a country. It's almost like the Articles of Confederation in the U.S. before we came together with the Constitution, formed a federal government, treasury. We were able to issue bonds. We had taxing authority. Europe has none of that. Not to mention it is plagued by rigidities, especially those in the labor market, which impedes labor mobility. And they are also plagued by a high percentage of their economy is made up of government. In Greece, it's 50%. Many of the countries in Europe, like France, almost 50%. And it has high taxes and high unemployment. So if there's a lesson for the president here or any politician, take a look at how this is working in Europe, and you want to repeat those same philosophies or those same policies here. It isn't working there, and it's not going to work here. But the real issue is really going to be the economies of Spain and Italy, because the number one economy in Europe is Germany, the second is France, and number three is Italy, and number four is Spain. So, you know, Greek is small potatoes, but nonetheless, the first issue before us is Greece.
Given the fact that the other countries are down the road, let's look specifically at Greece. This is where the watershed comes in and determines how other things are going to flow.
The problem that we have, and we don't know what the outcome's going to be, but the government itself and households in Greece are short of cash. For example, the Greek government is down to $2 billion in euros. They will run out of cash by July 20th. So I don't know what the outcome is, but if they decide to exit the austerity program, all financial aid to Greece, whether it's the IMF, whether it's the euro, is going to be cut off, and the Greek government will run out of money. It is basically insolvent. And if you take a look at the real problem is the Greek government has $3.1 billion of euro bonds that will have to be redeemed in August. They have $1.5 billion in September, $1.25 billion in October, $1.6 billion in November, and another $1.6 billion in December. The other problem that you have with Greece, if you take a look at tax revenues, spending is increased this year. So, you know, they're talking about austerity in Greece, and this is why the idiots in the media never get this right. You take a look at spending, actual expenditures by the government, it's increased from roughly about $28 billion to over $30 billion. So the government is actually spending more money. If you take a look at tax revenue, it has barely budged. And if you look at the deficit has gone from just slightly over 10 billion euros to almost 11 billion euros because tax revenues have gone down. Greece increased its VAT tax, that's the value-added tax, from 19% to 23%. And this gets back to the Tax-Mageddon story. They increased the tax rate from 19% to 23%. The result was tax revenues plunged by almost 20%. And as a result, another thing that you're seeing, remember Fight, Flight, or Fraud, Charles Adams' book, whenever taxes become oppressive, you either have fight, You have flight. People just leave from high-tax states to low-tax states, or high-tax countries to low-tax countries, or fraud. The estimated size of the underground economy in Greece is 24% of GDP. In Italy, it's 22%. Portugal, 19%. Spain, 19%. Germany, 13%. And Ireland, 12%. So it's amazing. Those states that have the highest tax rates have the highest percentage of noncompliance, the highest percentage of fraud, because when you make taxes so oppressive that you actually turn people into serfs, this is the result of it.
You know, if you remember earlier in the program, you and Rob were discussing rising bond yields in Europe despite the bailouts and what's going on over there. How does this impact everything?
Well, let's take Italian bond yields. On this day, Italian bond yields are roughly about 5.9%. The debt to GDP ratio in Italy at 5.89% is roughly 125%. If bond yields go back to where they were just a couple months ago at 6.8%, that debt to GDP ratio goes up to 131%, because obviously it's like if you have to pay a higher amount of interest on your debt, your interest expense goes up, your debt ratios go up, and that's why austerity isn't working. They raise tax rates lower economic growth, and that's why Greece is in a depression. When a country's in a depression, two things happen. Your social service costs go up, unemployment benefits, aid to individuals go up, so expenses rise. And secondly, your revenues fall. As I just mentioned, Greece raised their VAT tax 4 full percentage points from 19 to 23%, and tax revenues plummeted by almost 20%. So the real thing that happens here is they're not solving the problem. And the only way they're going to solve the problem is come together in a fiscal union where you have control over fiscal budgets, you have a treasury, you have a unifying, kind of like what the United States has. We have a federal government that can enact laws, legislation. We have a treasury that issues bonds. We have a central bank that control monetary policy. They don't have anything. They have a central bank that's very restricted, and that's why every time they come up with a rescue program, the rescue plan lasts for about 3 or 4 months, and they're back in a crisis. Think back to December of last year, the LTRO program of about six, you know, the ECB increased its balance sheet by over $1 trillion, and they did it in two increments, and they basically got a positive effect in the economy and the markets for about 3 to 4 months, and then it fades off. They're back into a crisis, and that's what they're going to do, is they're going to go from one crisis to the next until they either get a fiscal union or scrap the whole euro itself. The euro will not fail because of these small issues that we're dealing here. The euro is going to fail for lack of leadership. We talked about last week, there are no Churchills in Europe that can bring everybody together, create a consensus just like our founding fathers did to create the Constitution.
All right, let's take the flip scenario. What happens if they vote against austerity? Obviously, they're going back to the drachma. Then there will be a situation internally for the Greeks, and then the external effects as well.
Well, if they do that, I mean, about $1 billion a week is coming out of Greek banks because Greeks want the euro. The overwhelming majority of Greek citizens want the euro. They just don't want the austerity. And the problem is, if they exit the euro, the first thing that's going to happen is funding is going to be cut. Two, the government runs out of money July 20th. So they go back to the drachma, they're going to probably have to depreciate the drachma by 60 to 75%. In other words, devalue it. You're going to have hyperinflation. And people's life savings, if they're stuck in the country, are going to lose anywhere from 60 to 75% of their purchasing power. So that's why money is fleeing Greece right now. It's going to Switzerland, to UK banks, and banks in the US. In the end, though, Greece may not have a choice. It may exit the euro, not by choice, but out of necessity, because the drachma is far superior to a barter system. However, John, if it exits, I don't think it's going to be the doomsday scenario that everybody portrays it to be, because a lot of people have been taking evasive action, including the Greeks themselves. The real issue is not Greece. The real issue is Spain and Italy, because Italian debt yields are down today, but they were over 6% yesterday. And Italian bond yields were at 6.2. Now they're at 5.9. We have Spanish bond yields, which are roughly at 6.8%. And it's getting critical to that 7% level. At 7%, they will need a bailout. Italy's going to need a bailout. Ireland will probably want to renegotiate its bailout. So it's a whole chain of bailouts. And the problem is that if you take a look at how these things play out, fiscal and banking crises are linked together in modern economies. The state and banks are joined at the hip because banks purchase government debt supporting the state, and the government guarantees the liabilities of the bank. So when one entity is weakened, the other entity is weakened. And so this is a very, very big issue. And people are looking at the Germans, and the Germans are saying, look, we're not big enough to bail out everybody. It's going to take all of us. And if we're going to do these bailouts, we have to have some accountability. It's kind of like a lender. You have a borrower going to a lender and say, hey, I want to borrow money, but, you know, I don't want any provisions. I don't want to have to be responsible for making my payments or controlling my expenses. Everybody knows that doesn't work. We saw a lot of that in these liar loans where people were overstating their income. Just think of all the problems that we went through with all these mortgages and no-doc loans in 2007 and 2009. So from the German perspective, they're saying is, hey, we want to keep the euro. It's advantageous for us. It's good for trade. It makes us stronger, but we have to have some accountability. And in order to have that accountability, you're going to have fiscal union, because you can't have a euro bond market without fiscal union. You don't have taxing authorities. You can't have bank deposit guarantees. So you're going to have to, the Europeans are either going to have to come closer and closer together to a fiscal union, or this whole thing collapses.
You're listening to the Financial Sense NewsHour at financialsense.com.
Another one bites the dust. Country number four, Spain, gets bailed out, and we all, of course, know that it won't be the last. Though I wondered over the weekend whether perhaps I was missing something, because when the Spanish Prime Minister, Mr. Rajoy, got up, he said that this bailout shows what a success the Eurozone has been. And I thought, well, having listened to him over the previous couple of weeks telling us there wouldn't be a bailout, I've got the feeling after all his twists and turns, he's just about the most incompetent leader in the whole of Europe. And that's saying something, because there's pretty stiff competition. Indeed, every single prediction of yours, Mr. Barroso, has been wrong. And dear old Herman Van Rompuy, well, he's done a runner, hasn't he? Because the last time he was here, he told us we'd turn the corner, that the euro crisis was over, and he hasn't bothered to come back and see us. You know, I remember being here 10 years ago and hearing the launch of the Lisbon Agenda. We were told that with the euro, by 2010, we would have full employment, and indeed that Europe would be the competitive and dynamic powerhouse of the world. By any objective criteria, the euro has failed. And in fact, there is a looming, impending disaster. You know, this deal makes things worse, not better. 100 billion is put up for the Spanish banking system. And 20% of that money has to come from Italy. And under the deal, the Italians have to lend to the Spanish banks at 3%. But to get that money, they have to borrow on the markets at 7%. It's genius, isn't it? It really is brilliant. So what we're doing with this package is we're actually driving countries like Italy towards needing to be bailed out themselves. In addition to that, we put a further 10% on Spanish national debt. And I tell you, any banking analyst will tell you 100 billion doesn't solve the Spanish problem. It would need to be more like 400 billion. And with Greece teetering on the edge of euro withdrawal, the real elephant in the room is that once Greece leaves, the ECB, the European Central Bank, is bust. It's gone. It has 444 billion euros worth of exposure to the bailed out countries. And to rectify that, you'll need to have a cash call from Ireland, Spain, Portugal, Greece, and Italy. You couldn't make it up, could you? It is total and utter failure. This ship, the Euro Titanic, has now hit the iceberg, and sadly, there simply aren't enough lifeboats.
That's the voice of Nigel Farage in a speech that he gave to the European Parliament this week. He's a member of the European Parliament from the United Kingdom. One of the facts of life that we are facing here in this country is the fact, being a fact, that 10,000 to 12,000 baby boomers are retiring each day. I will never retire, my wife says. They will have to pry the microphone from my cold, hard, dead hands before I will give up. But
that makes two of us.
Okay, so as a matter of fact, I made sure that would happen. Crazy glue does wonders between your hand and the microphone. But anyway, a lot of these baby boomers are not like their parents. I remember when my dad retired. You would work for a company or for the government for 30 years or something like that. You would retire and get a defined pension plan in addition to a gold watch, which would pay you 80 to 90% of your salary, just like a lot of government pensions are still doing today. Prepare yourself for a shock. That era is gone. And boomers, as a rule, have nothing but what they've saved in their 401k programs. And if you work for government, you need to hear this, because even in government plans in the government sectors, there is a move away from defined benefit plans. And no amount of unions storming your state capitals is going to change that. That's just economic reality. Now, last week we did a segment on annuities. We got a lot of response from that. Five people called the office facing pension decisions with General Motors, because General Motors announced a little over a month ago that its employees have until July 20th to make a decision about their pensions. And you can see why companies and ultimately governments will be, I think, forced to do this as opposed to doing it voluntarily like a balance sheet issue. But private company or corporations, I shouldn't say private companies, but in the private sector rather than the public sector, they want to make sure that these pension options, these unfunded liabilities, get off of their balance sheet. And so you understand why they need to do that. So what we're doing today is a new series trying to cover all of these issues, as a matter of fact, regarding pensions. We're calling it Our Lifetime Income. Several times a month we'll do this. Today's topic, what happens when your company pension plan changes or, horror of horrors, the company lays you off in early retirement?
You know, it's amazing, John. There were two articles in the Wall Street Journal this week, one highlighting the fact that more states, municipalities are moving in this direction. We had an election here in San Jose on pensions. We also had one in San Diego where they're moving new workers to 401k plans. So the era of defined benefit pension plans is over. And the reason for that is for premium members, I did an interview with John Williams, and the government's unfunded Medicare and Social Security obligations are $100 trillion. Now, listen to this. The government takes in about a little over $2 trillion in tax revenues. The unfunded liabilities are growing at close to $6 billion a year. California alone has $250 billion. We're not even counting the states. If you take a look at state unfunded liabilities, it's probably another $25 trillion. So we have $125 trillion of unfunded liabilities. California has $250 billion, and it's one of the reasons they're trying to get this new tax based on the idea that it's going to help schools. That's balderdash. It's all about propping up union pension plans. And the problem is corporations in the 80s and 90s could no longer fund defined benefit pension plans, so they went to things like 401k plans or profit-sharing plans. And recently, General Motors has done the same thing. And if you go to the General Motors website, they have their reasons why they're doing this. One, they want to protect the amount of assets they already have so that current employees will have some kind of option, because if they continue doing what they're doing now, those pension options are going to become endangered. So that was number one. And the second reason is they want to get the pension liabilities off their balance sheet. Because when you look at financial statements on publicly held corporations, if you read the footnotes, it'll say that XYZ company has $2 or $3 billion of unfunded liabilities for their pensions. Now, what that tells analysts is that companies sooner or later are going to have to dip into their profits and take a big chunk of those profits to use them to prop up their pension plans. So that's why more and more companies, from General Motors to IBM to Maytag to all these Fortune 500 companies, are moving away. And the next wave is going to be government workers. So if you do work for the government, bear in mind this is coming. And especially if you're a younger government worker, whether you work for a state, a city, or the federal government.
Well, as we mentioned before, the General Motors decision has to be made by their employees by July 20th. Now, you got calls this week from General Motors employees. What options are they being offered?
What General Motors is doing is they're getting out of the pension business. They're going to allow employees two options. One would be an annuity option that would be with either Goldman Sachs or Prudential. And the second option is a lump sum payment. So you could take this lump sum payment, roll it over into an IRA where you would have control of it and do whatever that you feel that you need to do.
Let's see if we can break this out a bit, because I think we've really got two options here. Number one, you have an annuity option, but you do lose control right there. Or number two, you take a lump sum, which gives you some flexibility, but then you need to make some decisions about what you're going to do with that. And the reason we're not just talking about General Motors, because this is the catalyst for why we're discussing this, but this is the wave of the future, both in the private and the public sector.
Yeah, I think that probably the most important thing to do, John, because remember, whatever option you choose, that's the option you're going to be stuck with for the balance of your life. And that's why this is such a critical decision. You really need to do some planning before you choose, because the decision you make, it's going to stick with you the rest of your life. And there's all kinds of things that come into a play here. There's survivorship options. Are you going to take, let's say you choose the annuity option, is it going to be on your life only, which would be more income, or is it going to be on your life with some kind of survivor benefit to your spouse? There are estate planning options that come in here, depending on which option you choose. If you choose the annuity option, you don't have to worry about estate planning because, you know, after you die, the balance of your pension goes to the insurance company. There are lifestyle options in terms of, I'll explain more what I mean by that. In other words, you're going to have to, when you do your budget, you're going to have to break it up into two segments. What I call the essential budget is, what is it going to cost me to live on a daily basis? You know, what am I going to pay for either a mortgage payment, my utility bill, cable bill, my Medicare premium insurance for expenses not covered by Medicare, food, all the things that we need to live. Then there's the lifestyle option that comes on top of that. That is, okay, now that I'm retired, this is how much I need for basic options. What are those things I'd like to do extra in my retirement? Maybe I'd like to take one or two vacations a year or trips. Maybe I want to go to Europe. I want to go to New Zealand. I want to join the country club. I want to play more golf. I'd like to spend more time with my kids. There's a hobby. Whatever that is, that goes into the lifestyle options. Then the next one is medical options. And John, I can't tell you how this is so overlooked in retirement planning, leading to a lot of tragedies and disasters in people's retirement plans. And that is medical expenses, whether you end up in a retirement home or some kind of long-term care facility because of dementia or some kind of disabling disease like Parkinson's or something. We have a software program where we could plug in. It was given to us by an insurance company, and it's based on your medical history. So if you have high blood pressure, it gets into genetics. You know, how long did your father or mother live? What did they die of? Do you have any special medical illnesses right now or diseases? And we have a one-page questionnaire. You fill it out, and it plugs in. It tells you what your probabilities of this, and then it estimates what your medical costs are going to be. And if there's anything I've learned in 30 years of doing financial planning, this thing is so overlooked, and then all of a sudden tragedy arrives and you're not expected for it. So the fourth issue you have to deal with is medical options. And then another one that we're probably not going to have time to cover in today's Lifetime Income series, and that was a tax law that went into effect. It was passed on October 24th, 2011, which is a change in annuity options with some special tax-free benefits. But we're not going to have time to get into that today.
You know, as you're talking in this area here, it's really bewildering. You start to get this blah, blah, blah feeling in your head when you're listening to everything that you're saying. But I think it would be wise for people to sit down with a financial planner or a specialist to figure out what you're going to do, because once you do it, then you're pretty well stuck with it. If you look at the GM situation, they're being offered a lump sum payment, or you can have an annuity plan with somebody who's trustworthy like Goldman Sachs, which is what they're... I wouldn't say anything. Okay. Enough said on that. So if you were in that kind of a situation, what would you as a pensioner do?
You know, I mentioned the very importance of planning, and you really need to sit down and do some planning and think through these options. And I hate to say it, you're not going to like it when I say this. You got to start out with a budget, and you need to break up your budget into two parts. An essential budget. This deals with, hey, you know, if I retire, what do I need to run my living expenses? This isn't a wish list. This is just, hey, pay my utility bill, my cable bill, my insurance premiums, my car insurance, pay for food, put gas in my car, car payments or a new car every 5 or 10 years. Just the stuff that you need to live. That's called an essential budget. Look, this is a must figure that you need to get in order to live. The second thing is what I call target lifestyle budget, and that is, okay, once you get your essential budget, then what you need to do is say, okay, now that I'm retired, what are the things I really want to do? Hey, I never had the time to, you know, travel or go to places I wanted to see. I'd never been to Europe. I always wanted to go to China. So maybe it's, you know, one or two trips a year. Maybe it's taking up a new hobby, whether it's playing golf or it's a craft or, you know, some kind of avocation that you want to try. It might be, for example, helping your grandchildren, putting your grandchildren through college or private school. Because things are so tight in taxes and inflation, income haven't kept pace, we're seeing a lot of our clients help out their kids because education is getting more expensive. You look at, I don't care if you're going to, let's say, a state school or you're going to a private school, a lot of parents today are helping their children. And it's amazing because there was another article in the Wall Street Journal today said, counting on an inheritance, you better count again because mom and dad are going through their principal because of low interest and rising expenses. So the first step is to sit down and come up with a budget, and that budget has to be broken down into two parts, an essential budget and a lifestyle budget. In other words, sort of a wish list. If I could have money to do everything I wanted to do in retirement, what would that be and what would it cost me? The third thing, which is ignored, and I can't tell you, once again, I hate to keep pounding the table, it ends up in disaster. One spouse gets sick, gets dementia, gets Parkinson's, has a debilitating illness that lasts for 2 or 3 years that utilizes a lot of expenses. So you need to come up with the medical expense estimator. Like I said, we have a software program where you just plug in your health, your genetics, the things. It was done by an actuarial company. And so once you have that, you know what the number you need to have in terms of either pension, Social Security. And then once you have your expenses, now you can look at the income side. What do I need to get? You know, you probably can get from Social Security. What's your Social Security? They send you out usually once a year what your benefits will be at age 62, 65, etc. And then you can look at the pension options being offered by the company.
Well, it doesn't just do enough to say that they have two options. You have to look at the options in terms of their circumstances. So let's take what you've been talking about. We have number one here from, let's say, General Motors. They have two options. One is a lump sum payment. The second is an annuity plan with either Goldman Sachs or Prudential. So under which conditions would you do one? Which conditions would you do the other?
Okay, well, it's going to take a little bit more planning, but I'm going to talk about the first option is going to be where you take the annuity option. So we begin with the monthly budget. And, you know, let's say your monthly budget is $3,000 a month, $4,000, $5,000, $6,000 a month. Whatever that budget is, you know what your annual expenses are going to be. So once you know what your expenses are going to be, now let's look at the sources of income. And usually there are probably three other sources of income. There is Social Security, if you paid into the system. There is between a husband and wife. Let's say the husband is retiring from GM. Maybe the wife worked and the wife is going to have a pension or Social Security as well. So you need to take a look at what your wife's pension is going to be or what your wife's Social Security in addition to your own Social Security. And then in addition to that, do you have other assets? In other words, do you have an investment portfolio, stocks, bonds, cash in the bank, rental property, whatever it is? In other words, do you have investment income where you can get income from some investment, whatever that is? Once you know what that is, then it's pretty straightforward because you can compare what your potential sources of income are versus what your expenses are going to be.
Well, I guess this decision, whether you take the lump sum or the annuity option, really depends on your other budget options, because if you have other sources of income, that gives you a little more flexibility as to what you want to do with the GM pension money.
Yeah, because really, John, it's pretty straightforward. It's a lot easier than it sounds. It's not that hard. Once you can nail down your budget and break it up into two parts, what it's going to cost you to live, and then what is your target lifestyle? In other words, what's my wish list on top of what it costs me to live? So it really gets down to basics, but it's important that you start out with a plan, because without a plan, you could be making choices that could turn out to be a disaster. But at least when you have a plan, it's easier to make the right decisions. You know what your budget is. You know what your income is going to be. You know what your options and flexibility is. And then you can pull this together. So I can't overemphasize, please put together a plan before you just willy-nilly just make a decision and really sit down and make sure whoever you're doing planning with, you've discussed all the various options that we talked about in terms of survivorship options, estate planning options, lifestyle options, medical options, investment options. You know all these things in advance rather than deal with them when you're faced with the crisis.
Let's just plug some real life numbers into all of this. Let's go to the annuity option first.
Okay, let's start out with the annuity option. This makes sense when you know the following things. Number one, you have a budget and you have very little other sources of income. In other words, your income is limited. You maybe don't have other pensions, or if you do, between your pension and your spouse's pension, your Social Security, it's really not enough to meet your lifestyle needs. And so that's number one. You have very few pension options, and you have very few investment options. Maybe you don't have a large enough investment portfolio that will provide you with flexibility. That's the first thing. Number two, you are not concerned with leaving anything to your children, because remember, when you choose the annuity option, assuming that you're married and you're going to choose a survivor option for, let's say, your wife, and usually when you do that, when you die, your wife gets a survivor benefit, but it's a lot less than what you got. But the important thing is if you choose the annuity option, your kids aren't going to get anything. So if GM's offering you $250,000, $500,000, $750,000, whatever that number is, if you take the annuity option and then, you know, 2 years from now, you and your wife die in a, you know, you get on the wrong airplane or the wrong freeway, the insurance company gets a windfall. They keep all that money. That goes to the insurance company. It's not going to your kids. And then the other thing is, what if you don't expect an inheritance? Like the article in the Wall Street Journal this week, It was called Counting an Inheritance, Count Again. The bad news is many baby boomers are likely to get less money from mom and dad than they thought, with the tax rates on estates likely to go up to 55%, the exemption drop, plus mom and dad getting low investment returns, and plus with rising medical costs, even in a worst case, you may end up taking care of your parents, as some do. And then the other thing is important to also know is your life expectancy, health problems. You know, how long did your mom and dad live? This gets back to the medical option. So if your only income choice is the annuity option and the Social Security you get, and you have no other sources of income or assets, then you're probably going to have to go with the annuity option because, you know, unfortunately, you don't have a choice here because you don't have other pensions. You don't have other sources of income from investments. So you're going to need to maximize that money that you get, and you're just going to have to give away. You're going to give up flexibility, inflation protection, assets going to the kids, but it may be the only option you have left. So under those circumstances, it may be the only option you have, but it comes at a cost because what you're going to do is you have, number one, no protection against inflation. Two, you have absolutely no flexibility. Three, usually with a survivor benefit to your wife, when let's pick on the husband. Let's say the husband worked at General Motors. He wants a survivorship option for his wife. Usually the wife is going to get a cut in the pension when her husband dies, and usually that's going to be over 30%. And then fourth is if you die prematurely, the company, the insurance company, gets your assets. And number five, you're going to have no access to that cash. In other words, if you got a lump sum payment and you rolled it over to an IRA, and a medical emergency comes up, you need to draw out extra money to buy a new car, you have access to that cash. When you choose the annuity option, you get a monthly check. That's it. You don't have access to that income. In this case right now, let me give you an example. And this was one of the examples of the couple that called in. The couple needed $50,000 to live, roughly about $4,000 a month. They had a lump sum payment from GM. I'm just going to round it out. It was about $600,000. They were going to get a check from GM about $3,000 a month on the husband's life. And if he passed away, his wife would roughly, her income would be cut by a third. She would get $2,000. So as long as the husband was alive and healthy, they would get a monthly check of $3,000, and then they would get a $2,000 check to the wife if the husband died. Since they needed $50,000, the pension income or the annuity option gave them $36,000 a year. Combine that with income from Social Security, which was around $1,300, they barely were able, between the annuity option and Social Security, to meet their living expenses of $50,000. So in this circumstances, working this budget through this couple, they didn't have any other investment income, and their most important thing was taking care of each other and meeting their budget needs. They really didn't have a choice, and we recommended that they go with the pension option because the pension option amounted to almost a 7% return on cash each month, and they needed that. They needed $50,000. Now, I said eventually, if the husband passed away, the wife would be better off putting the family home for sale because her income was going to be reduced by $12,000 a year. There's no way, and this is not even taking into consideration inflation, there was no way she was going to be able to live in that house when her income is reduced by $1,000 a month. There would also be further problems down the road if, let's say, her husband, who was older than she, developed medical problems, had to go into a retirement home. She would still end up selling the house, and I recommended they probably downsize their home right now would be the best thing for them to do rather than wait for some kind of medical issue. And I also recommended they move to an area that was less expensive than where they were living, and especially a tax-free state. So anyway, we recommended the annuity option and downsizing their home rather than to wait for inflation to kick in. You know, right now interest rates are low, the housing market has picked up. If tax-ageddon hits, we could be right back into another great recession or depression. So I recommended that they take the annuity option because they had no other outside income, and this was really the best choice for them to proceed with because they just didn't have flexibility. They had no investment income, and it was more important they take care of each other than leave anything to their kids.
So in this circumstance, they really had no choice. They needed the maximum income the annuity provided, and they weren't concerned about leaving money to their kids. So that would seem to be, what would you say, that was the logical choice in that case.
Exactly. The downsides to that is if they died prematurely, let's say the husband only lived a couple of years and died, his wife would get a survivor benefit, but her income would be reduced by $12,000. And if they both die prematurely, you know, it's a windfall for the annuity company. They really don't have any inflation protection or flexibility. They can't access cash for an emergency. But John, given their circumstances, you know, I really recommended that they really downsized where they were at. Because I said, do you want to do it now while you're both alive? Or do you want to wait till your husband passes away and then all of a sudden you're forced to do it because of the reduction in your income? And what if the market is terrible at that time? So they have equity in their home, at least now. And that was the other thing, too. I said, if you sold the home now, you have some equity there that could provide you with a little flexibility for emergencies down the road. You may not have that equity if tax-ageddon hits and we go back into a great recession. So, but anyway, that was option one, and that made perfect sense for this couple because that was really the only thing they could do.
So now behind door number two is the lump sum option, and of course you're taking that money, you have to do something with it. And I needed to ask you a little later too, because when you're talking about planning all of this stuff, when you're planning the future needs for income, remember now we may be faced with huge amounts of inflation clobbering us in the near future, so it's not all things being equal, you're constantly having to revise what your income figure is going to be. But go ahead and start with the lump sum.
Okay, well the first thing with the lump sum, you can roll it over into an IRA. And that's going to give you flexibility. You can change how you invest those assets. You control how you invest those assets. And you can have access to those assets, whether you need it for a retirement home, take a vacation, you need to buy a car, let's say a medical emergency comes up. So the first thing the lump sum payment gives you is greater flexibility. Number two, you have inflation protection. You could do a laddered bond portfolio. You can do high dividend paying blue chips. And remember, later on, as you get older, you could always turn it into annuity later on. Let's say as you get into your 70s, where you can get a tremendous higher payout. So you still haven't lost the annuity option. You could always do that later on, but you do have inflation protection. Number three, instead of, in this case, where the couple took the annuity of $600,000, that $600,000, what's left, it goes to the insurance company. Had you rolled the $600,000 into an IRA, that $600,000 can go to your kids or your grandkids, and there's ways to minimize the estate taxes and the income taxes that you pay on that $600,000. So many things that you can do with that money. I mean, think of your kids. Think of your grandchildren. Think of maybe down the road, instead of taking X amount of dollars out of your IRA, you decide, you know what, we want to take a trip to Europe. We've never been to Europe before. I want to take an extra $10,000 and we're going to go to Europe. I'm just going to take it out of the IRA. You can do that. You have access. So you can also use it when we talk about target lifespan. And here's the other thing that you have to be aware of, and what this is from some planning software that we have. And it's from the Social Security. It's life expectancy tables. And what I did is I took two scenarios, a male age 60 and a male age 65. And then I also took a look at females with different ages. Okay, so let's look at life expectancy. If you are a male age 60, your life expectancy is another 21 years. And so if you retire today at age 60, you have a high probability 11 to at least 81. If you're a woman age 60, you have a high probability that you could live another 24 years. Let's go to the next age bracket. Let's say age 65, you're a male. At age 65, you have a life expectancy of another 17.2 years. If you are a female, you have another life expectancy of 20 years. And then we took a look at options. What we see a lot of times is husband and wives. Very seldom do you see husband and wives that are the same age. Usually the wife is maybe 4 years, 5 years, 6 years younger than the husband. And so what I did is I took a look at a woman age 55 has a life expectancy of 28 and a quarter years. A woman age 52 has a life expectancy of 31 years. A woman age 53, 30 years. And a woman 54 has a life expectancy of 29 years. And the problem is with that annuity option is the income drops by a third. And if you are a woman, even the same age as your husband, your life expectancy is 4 to 6 years longer than your husband. And if you're younger, 4 or 5 years, 6 years, 8 years, 10 years younger than your husband, then you can have a life expectancy that could be anywhere from 28 years to 35 years longer than your husband. So, you know, women live longer. And so that takes into consideration. The other thing is you don't know how this turns out. There are a lot of widowers where the husband outlives the woman. And so you have that flexibility as well.
So the lump sum works as long as you have other income sources. Perhaps the spouse has other sources of income or even another plan that he or she has. Other investments, say, for example, to provide income, and where the living expenses are less than the annuity option.
Absolutely. So, I mean, the lump sum has probably 5 or 6 different advantages over the annuity option. Number one, you have access to cash in case of emergency, a medical emergency. You want to help a kid. Let's say you have a grandson or granddaughter that needs to go to college. You want to help them out. You need to buy a new car. You want to take a trip to Europe. Whatever that unexpected emergency is, you have access to your cash. Number two, you have flexibility when it comes to options, especially on the investment side, where you can handle inflation options. You can handle different things that you have to deal with, whether you want to change your investment portfolio. And like I said, once again, 5 years from now, 10 years from now, you could always turn it into an annuity where the annuity payments would be a heck of a lot higher the older you get than if you were to take an annuity option now. So you have flexibility. Third, there is no loss of income if the pensioner dies. In other words, let's say the husband works for the company, he dies. Well, usually the survivor option, you lose about a third of your income. You don't have that loss of income. Number four, you have inflation protection. You can change the investment portfolio down the road to change if market conditions change or inflation changes. And number five, you can pass those assets to your children and grandchildren, and you can minimize the taxes that are paid at death and have that asset passed on to your family at a lower tax bracket. So there are five options, five more advantages of a lump sum. But once again, it depends. In the case of the one couple we advised this week, we advised them to take the pension option from GM. They're going to forego the $600,000. But, you know, in this case, they really didn't have a choice. So that's just an example, John, of a lot of decisions that a lot of Americans are going to be faced. It's not just the employees at GM. You're going to see this decision faced with a lot of people today that are going to be given early retirement packages. It's going to be faced by a lot of companies like not just General Motors that are changing their pension plans. They're getting rid of their defined benefit plans, getting the pension off their balance sheet. And it's going to be faced by a lot of people working for government today, whether it's federal, state, or municipal government, as more of this pension option is changed. The defined benefit pension plan is going the way of the dodo bird. We saw it in the elections this last Tuesday. And like I said, the federal government, the U.S. government, has over $100 trillion of unfunded pension liabilities growing at $5 trillion a year. State and municipal governments have $25 trillion of unfunded liabilities, and this is the trend in the future. So the very things that we're talking about today are going to be faced by a good majority of baby boomers heading into retirement, and even young Americans today, as they think about, you know, when you're 25 or 30, you're probably not thinking about this kind of stuff, or even in your 40s today. But believe me, if you're 40 today, 60 comes really fast, a lot faster than you think. And you don't want to get yourself in a situation like this. And that's why we call this our lifetime income series. And we're going to be covering this at least two or three times a month on the planning side and sort of deal with these issues so people can have a better perspective. Like I said, this all begins with the plan. And whatever you do, find somebody you can work with that understands this, that can help and assist you, knows the tax laws, the investment laws, so that you have a plan before you make that decision. Just don't say, oh, okay, I'm going to take this decision, without really sitting down with your spouse so both husband and wife know the circumstances and the consequences of what they do before they make that fatal decision.
You know, it's interesting how the fate of the entire world, it sounds dramatic there, like a movie, is hanging on these Greek elections, because based on what happens to them will also affect what happens to the euro, which affects what happens to other currencies. Sort of strange. It's almost like the mouse that roared, my big fat Greek election. So it's just not just that, but other issues. And by next week, I don't think we have a clue what we're going to be talking about, because we don't know where all this is going to come down.
I mean, you really think about it. We've got the Greek elections, which they could exit the euro. I think it's not as doomsday as some people play it out to be. And then we have the FOMC meeting, because remember, John, the closer we get, this is a presidential election year. The last thing the Fed wants to be doing is doing QE in September and October, because that would be very, very political. So if they're going to make a move, they're either going to do it this month by maybe changing the language, hinting that what may be coming next month when the Fed meets on July 31st and August 1st. So, wow. I mean, I wish I had a crystal ball looking at what the markets are going to look like after these two major events that are going to take place here within the next 4 or 5 days. So, God only knows what you and I are going to be talking about when it comes to next weekend's show. But meanwhile, we've run out of time. And we just want to tell you, we've started a number of new things with the program, our premium service, which we're starting, and we're going to be adding to that premium service, including graphs, things that we use to put together the big picture. Eventually, we'll be adding videos, more extensive, actionable items, and the type of interviews that we do. But a lot of great stuff coming up that we're also going to be handling on the program in our lifetime income series, because as John mentioned earlier, 10 to 12,000 baby boomers are heading into retirement on a daily basis. They're going to be faced with estate planning, pension options, investment options, tax law changes. All these things are converging. And as we talked about in this week's segment in our lifetime income series, we're going to be adding to that, and we're going to bring in a lot more planning into the program, because we've just been getting so many requests. I'm a certified financial planner, so I've done this for 30 years, and we're going to try to bring that in and hopefully have you navigate all these complicated issues that many of you are facing out there. So in the meantime, we're out of time. So on behalf of John Loeffler and myself, hope we'll be talking about happy things when it comes to next Friday, but we've run out of time. So until you and I speak again, we hope you have a pleasant weekend.
Subscribe to Financial Sense NewsHour in the iTunes and BlackBerry podcast libraries, or at feeds.feedburner.com/FSM. Find more information about our guests at www.financialsense.com/newshour. Friend us at www.facebook.com/financialsenseonline. For our on-the-go listeners, you can access Financial Sense on your mobile device at m.financialsense.com. The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of James Poplava and do not take into account listeners' suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies profiled on or advertising with Financial Sense, or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.